Good afternoon.
And thank you so much, Jim Lobulus, for turning over this time to us. So we have a standing invitation out to the governor to come on anytime he thinks there's something to be said. So, Governor, thanks for being with us. We're very flattered.
Thanks for having me, Alan.
Let me start by asking you about the news of the day. President Trump has tweeted recently just before noon today, he said, thousands of federal government-delivered ventilators found in New York storage. New York must distribute now. What's the president talking about?
I don't know. There was a report on Fox last night to that effect. Thousands of ventilators sent and not deployed. They're in a stockpile in New York City. And if I had to guess, I would say that that's where the president got it from. It was a really ignorant point. We are putting together a stockpile. Stockpile. Stockpile, by definition, is you're putting together equipment for when you need to deploy it. We have about healthcare capacity now of about 50,000 beds. Not all 50,000 beds are filled. We're threatened with going to 140,000 beds at the apex of the coronavirus. We have to be prepared for the 140,000. We're fine where we are right now with equipment in terms of ventilators for the 50,000 beds. The problem is if we go to 140,000. And that's why we're putting together the stockpile, and that's why we need the 30,000 ventilators. You don't deploy from a stockpile unless and until you need it. That's the definition of a stockpile. So it's a sort of sensational but ignorant point. And, the president's tweet, if he got it from Fox, the old expression, garbage in, garbage out. That's what I would say about that, Alan.
You use the ignorant word, the I word. Does he, I mean, is he truly ignorant, or is this malicious?
Well, I said the piece on Fox was ignorant, ignorant as in devoid of fact. It's just not informed. It's not factual. It's not intelligent. It's ignorant of the fact. It's ignoring the fact. We're putting together a stockpile. Look at the word. We're putting together a stockpile. We don't need any of this equipment today. We don't need the ventilators today. We don't need any of the equipment today. Right now, the capacity is going up. I'm sorry, the number of cases are going up, but we're not over capacity today. The apex would bring us double capacity. That's the problem. So to say, well, they're not using it now. I mean, I get it's a nice sensational point, and it sounds like it means something because people would assume you're requesting equipment for today. But that's not what this is. We're not requesting equipment for today. Some cases we are. PPE, the gowns, the masks, et cetera, we only have a very short supply of that, literally 1 week, 2 weeks or so. You have some hospitals saying that they only have a couple of days' supply on the PPE. But the ventilators, 30,000 ventilators, that's not until the apex, which we estimate to be 21 days. The president also said he doesn't think we'll need 30,000 ventilators. And I hope he's right. I hope we don't need any ventilators. I hope this virus goes away tomorrow. I hope that there's some weather change that just kills it. But I can't operate on a hunch. I have to operate on data and facts and science. We have a McKinsey company. We have the Cornell Weill Medical Institute. I talked to Dr. Fauci. I talked to the World Health Organization, National Institute of Health. We have a mathematical projection of the caseload increase based on China and South Korea and Italy and the numbers in New York State. And that's where we get our projection. And I have to prepare for that projection. That projection goes to a need of 30,000 ventilators. So I wish it weren't true. And I'm an optimist, so I'm hoping that we don't need that many. But as a government official, as the governor, I have to operate on data. I can't operate on, you know, my gut instinct about a coronavirus, which, by the way, nobody knows anything about the coronavirus. So that's why I make the assumptions I make based on the projections and the data we have.
Do you get furious? I mean, personally angry when the president pulls a move like this and doesn't think about it and just thinks he's going to get away with it? Doesn't it anger you personally?
You know, if it angered one, one would have a serious ulcer by now, right?
Sure.
The president and his tweets, this has been from day one. You know, they tend to be emotional. They tend to be provocative. I don't think anyone really takes them factually. They're often not correct. They're not backed on, based on fact. So I don't know that anyone really takes them as informational, factual tweets or transfers of knowledge. It's just what he does. So,
but why does he do it? I'm assuming it's political. I'm assuming from where I'm sitting, you're getting all of this credit for handling yourself so well and all of the factual material that you're putting out there. And he's not doing that. He lies. Pardon me. So if that's the case, maybe this is just you're not me. I'm getting even with you.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, but who knows? Who knows? Maybe coincidental. But today the president also blasted General Motors for being slow on the production of ventilators.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that.
Yeah, well, and that's curious because when the president acknowledged the need for ventilators, their strategy was to go to companies that volunteered to help create them.
As opposed to
the Defense Production Act, where you mandated that they be produced. And interesting, GM was at the top of the list of the companies that were going to produce ventilators. The president basically really took them to task for being slow today. And then also today said, and New York doesn't need 30,000. I don't think New York needs 30,000. Repeated the Fox point that they're not being used. I don't know. Maybe they're connected or maybe they're all, maybe they're just random thoughts. I don't know. But my relationship right now with the federal government is not a political relationship. It's a fundamental constitutional operational relationship, and we need the federal government. I asked the federal government today for an additional 4 temporary hospitals to be built by the Army Corps of Engineers, and that's another 1,000 beds that we would have to the count. That's important. So I'm trying to keep politics, emotion out of this and just function as a good partner, cooperative partner in a state federal relationship, which is where we are now. Look, if the government relationship ever had to work, it has to work now.
You were supposed to talk to the president, I understand, today about that, about this additional emergency hospitals. Did you have that conversation?
Not yet, but I will contact him today. I spoke to him a couple of times yesterday.
Really? How does that work? How do you get through to the president of the United States? You say, this is Andrew Cuomo on the phone, and he picks up, or do you have to go through, you know, a lot of red tape to get to him?
Not so much. I call his his assistant, and sometimes he's available, sometimes he calls back, but he's always been, he's always made himself available. I mean, it's never been that I can't get him, and that's been remarkable, I'll tell you the truth. He has a very busy schedule, and he's remarkably good at returning my phone call. That I can tell you, it's highly respectful of that relationship.
Interesting. Hey, Vermont has already canceled the rest of the school year. How likely is it that students will come back at all in New York?
Well, I'm doing it at 2-week tranches, just because we really don't know what we're dealing with. I canceled it for 2 weeks today. I renewed it for another 2 weeks, Alan. If the numbers don't change in 2 weeks dramatically, then we would cancel it for another 2 weeks. But there may come a point in time where you just say, forget it, the numbers aren't changing, and the 2-week intervals are no longer rationalized. So you just make a decision. But I still want to do 2 weeks by 2 weeks, because who does know, right? We really don't know what we're dealing with. We have all this past data and trajectories, but maybe God intervenes and does something special for us. And I don't want to say now it's canceled for the rest of the year, and then all the school districts unwind and all the teachers make plans and then have to go back. You can't restart the engine once you turn it off.
Governor, following up on that, you made a little news yesterday when you're talking to us and to others, you said that we're going to have to slash education funding, slash maybe too profound a word, in the budget, but it's going to cost money. You have to come up with that money to balance the budget from somewhere. So what do you mean by that specifically?
What the federal government did, we were waiting. There was one variable before we closed the state budget, which was what is the federal government going to do in its relief bill? And we found that out when they did their $2 trillion plan. And their $2 trillion plan has unemployment insurance and a lot of goodies, small businesses, money for hospitals, money for local governments, a lot of good things in there. But they didn't give any money to state governments, and they didn't give money to local governments for non-coronavirus issues. So they gave New York State $5 billion to use on the coronavirus. That totally disregards the point that we have a $10 to $15 billion gap in the budget, because revenues just stopped. And the federal government postponed the tax filings until June. So by definition, we won't even collect any money until June. And in June, the receipts will be way down. So we have a $10 to $15 billion hole. We have to do a budget in 3 days. They give us zero.
So what are you doing?
For the state budget. Well, there's no option. I said kiddingly to a legislator before, I said, this is the easiest budget we've done. There's no option. The number is zero. We have no money. So where do we spend money? It's education. And we don't have money to fund education, certainly at any increased level that we discussed in the in my initial budget projection. We'll have health care money because they do give us $5 billion to fight coronavirus. And, you know, the coronavirus money is, I would assume, is fairly fungible since everything is coronavirus now from a hospital's point of view. And they gave hospitals additional funding. But when you give a state no relief, then, and you know the state government is looking at a $10 to $15 billion hole, they, in essence, cut education funding, which is what they did.
Okay, but what are you going to do about that? I mean, you know, where do the school districts get that money? How do they deal with it? You know, they got budgets, they got teachers' salaries, they've negotiated increases. What do they do?
Well, what we're looking at now is the federal bill does fund school districts. They sort of bypassed local government and funded the needs that they wanted to fund with their federal bill. So we're looking at how much they funded school districts to see how far that will go. We're looking to see how much they funded hospitals to see where that will go. But when they gave nothing to the state, you know, that was it. Also, by the way, this state once again gets clobbered by the federal government. We get the $5 billion we get for coronavirus. That's 1.9% of our budget, okay, of our overall budget.
Yep.
We have more coronavirus cases than any state in the United States. They give states out west 10% of their budget, 17% of their budget, 19% of their budget.
So it's pork barrel.
And they have like four coronavirus cases.
So it's pork barrel as usual, those guys. Let me ask you something. We've been getting some calls. Some leaders from upstate New York are calling on you to establish a travel ban on people coming from the New York City area, or to establish an order requiring them to self-quarantine for 14 days. I don't like it, but I'm not the governor. You are. Will you issue such a ban?
No, I don't like it. I don't like it socially or culturally. I don't like it. I don't like what it says about us as one state, one family. Also, I don't believe it's medically justified. Commissioner, our health commissioner, Howard Zucker, doesn't recommend it.
It does seem that when people get into this kind of mess, some people get angry, and then you start seeing lines at gun shops to buy even more guns. And then you start thinking about all the domestic politics of people being cooped up together and people are having domestic fights. It's very worrisome to me.
Oh, no, this is perilous ground, Alan. This is perilous ground. You're exactly right. You can see how the fabric of society quickly frays. People are under stress. People are frightened, I think, first of all. The fear turns into an anger. There's possible chaos. Let me get a gun. Let me buy ammo. The shops are overwhelmed, apparently. Isolation itself is something, right? If you're isolated alone, I have people isolated now, right? My daughter was in isolation. You spend 14 days alone in a home. That's emotionally very stressful. You spend 14 days in a house with kids and your partner. That can be stressful on a much different level.
Yeah.
The fear on top of it, you know, you're out of control. Any controlling personality, how do you deal with this? I can't touch a doorknob. I'm afraid of another human being. It's so difficult on so many levels and so destructive on so many levels.
I only have 2 minutes of your very valuable time, and I do appreciate your being with us. But I wanted to ask you something. Senator Schumer did this package that we're looking at now, and which you've been somewhat critical of or about. I'm wondering, how are you and Schumer getting along? Have you talked? What's the deal? I mean, he is, after all, the leader of the Democrats in the Senate.
Yeah, no, we've talked about it. This state, not only did it take a beating in this bill, but the previous bill that had $6 billion for New York State allocated in Medicaid money, we don't even qualify for, because they put in a provision in the bill that you can't make any changes to your Medicaid program. And we're in the middle of our MRT, which started back in January, had nothing to do with this bill, Medicaid redesign team. The MRT is finished. And I said to all of the congressional delegation, you know, we're not even going to get the $6 billion from the what they call FMAP, Medicaid money, from the previous piece of legislation, because we redesigned Medicaid to make it more efficient. And it was an MRT that's passed by the Assembly and the Senate, headed by Michael Dowling, Northwell, and Dennis Rivera, former head of 1199. They said the only excuse I heard was, well, unions didn't like it. First of all, what unions didn't like it? Dennis Rivera was from 1199. That's the hospital union.
Sure. Yep.
And what does that mean? That's old-time politics. Unions don't like it. Somebody didn't like it, so you just didn't give $6 billion to New York? And the second bill, where we get no money for the state government? And then you watch. When we cut education funding, they're going to say, oh, the state cut education funding. The state baloney. You don't like your education budget? Go call your federal representative.
So we're out of time. I hate this because I really want to talk to you for a while longer. I really do. But I was told to cut it off at 3:50, and here it is.
Well, I'm not going anywhere unless you're in a rush.
No, I'm not. I'd be delighted to ask you the next question if you don't
Go
mind
ahead.
For a couple of seconds.
Sure.
Okay. So how do you do your job? I mean, you've got to figure out not only what you want to spend in the budget, and you have come up with a plan that you can adjust the budget as you go. The legislature clearly may have some problems with that. How do you deal with that?
I don't know how they have any problems with it, because I don't know what the alternative is.
Yeah.
We're going to have to adjust down the initial. You know, the legislature was waiting for this federal bill. And they all assumed the federal bill would have an amount of funding for the state government. So that's why we were all sitting here waiting. So everybody is shocked. I don't know what alternative we have. We have to revise down the initial projection because we just don't have any money. And then, well, maybe the economy will come back. Maybe it's 2 months. Maybe it's 6 months. Maybe the federal government will actually act responsibly and pass a bill that helps the states. So what we're thinking is we revise down the initial projection, and then we do basically a quarterly update that reflects the actual finances.
Well, is that you? Does the legislature get to participate in these decisions? Because the way I read it, maybe the newspapers weren't quite right on this, that you wanted that power for yourself as opposed to sharing it with the legislature. What's up?
No, what I'm saying, what I'm talking to them about is make it a pure mathematical formula. We do the initial budget. We do the reductions, and then we say, this is what you will get. You'll get $100 if we have $100, and then we'll tell you mathematically how much money we have versus that $100 every quarter. So it's like a local government can look at the bank statement, and you'll know exactly what we get and what we're paying out.
But how do you plan? How do you plan for that? In other words, you make a budget, and the schools go out and say, okay, this is what we have to spend. And all of a sudden, you hear from the legislature and the governor, it's going to be less.
Well, first, you don't plan until we pass a budget, right? That's the only good news. Is
right.
They didn't have anything to plan against. They had my projected number, but they know my projected number is just my projected number. They don't get a number until the budget comes out. So the budget projection will be a number for them to plan against. They'll then have to deal with a certain level of uncertainty, which I also have to deal with.
Sure.
Here's the number. I can tell you this is going to be the number today. I can't tell you if it's going to be more, but here are quarterly updates that you're going to get, so you'll know what I know when I know it.
Now, the leaders of both houses, Governor, have you spoken to them about this plan? Are they on board, or are they balking?
Well, it's we've never been here before, but I don't know what option there is. You know, I don't know what our finances are going forward. They don't know what the finances are going forward. We do know the hole we're in on day one. So I think it's the most honest way to do this. Here's the initial projection. And then if the money comes in, we'll give it to you. If the money doesn't come in, we're not going to be able to give it to you.
Now, you've always been proud of the fact that you've been able to pass these budgets on time. Doesn't look good this year, right? Or am I wrong?
Well, there's an incentive for everyone to do it because it is professionalism. It is one of the indicators of pay increases. It is one of the indicators of a successful legislative session. They can do it on time. I mean, there's not a lot of good news in it. But again, there's not a lot to argue about because when there's no money to spend, you can't spend a lot of time, Alan, arguing about how to spend it.
I'm sure that the teachers' unions and the others are going to land on these your legislative colleagues and say, hey, help, help, help. You know, there may be a tendency to make you into the bad guy.
Well, then fine. Then let the legislature say, okay, here's my alternative. I can turn loaves and fishes. You know, I can see them, make them multiply. Look, every interest group, every lobbyist gets paid to say one word, right, which is more. I need more. It is really hard in this environment to come forward and say, the economy is crashing down, but I should be held harmless from all of reality. Now, I'm sure some of them will not have a problem doing it, but it really is on the edge of ridiculousness.
Are you watching your own health, Governor? We see Brian Miller has tested positive, a fourth member of the state legislature, Assemblyman Brian Miller. Obviously, a lot of us are not going out of our houses. I'm one of them. Every time I turn on the TV or see you, you're with other people. Are you cognizant of the fact that you could get sick?
Yes, but I'm also cognizant of the fact that I have a job to do now, Alan. And I don't have that luxury, frankly, of just worrying about my own health. And every day, it weighs on me that police officers are going out there and nurses are going out there and first responders. I was with the National Guard today. I called up these people, I brought them out of their home. I brought them into harm's way. I did that. It was in the best interest of the state, but I did that. And I said to them, what I've said to the National Guard, by the way, in every circumstance, I will never ask you to do anything that I won't do myself, and I'll never ask you to go anywhere that I won't go myself.
Should we be doing more? I only got 2 minutes, but should we be doing more? I got a letter from a lady today. Her son picks up the materials from the prisons that they're manufacturing and has to deliver it, and she's scared because they have no masks, they have nothing to wear. And she said, well, you call your friend the governor and see what he can do, you know, about this. You must get this every minute.
Yeah, I get it every minute. And there's never enough that you can do, because what they're really saying is, why should my friend, my brother, my son be in a place of danger? And there's no good answer to that, Alan. It's public service. It's public duty. It's community spirit. It's we have to keep the place running. The lights have to be on. The food has to be in the grocery store. We need hand sanitizer. And people sacrifice themselves and take risks. Yeah. And so, yeah, I'm not going to sit at home and say everybody else, I'm going to call up the National Guard, and I'm going to just protect myself. I'm not built that way. I can't do it. I can't do it in good conscience. That's not what this job is. I don't believe that's what this job is. And if that's what it takes, I'm not willing to do it. I'll tell you the God's honest truth. I spoke to Dr. Zucker. He makes the same point that you make. You know, this is, you go, you're in these situations, you expose yourself. But I'm asking thousands of people to do that every day. I'm not going to do it myself. I can't do it.
Very well put. Governor, thank you so much. I can't tell you how we appreciate the fact that you're honoring us by talking to us and telling us what you're thinking and feeling. I very much appreciate it. That's a personal remark. And anybody doesn't like it, tough noogies. That's the way I feel about it. And thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. I love that, tough noogies. I haven't heard that in a while. I'm going to use that. Thank you, Alan.
Okay.
Thanks. Bye.